Hi, ladies. Welcome to the Olives and Arrows podcast, where we discuss women's health, marriage, fertility, pregnancy, birth, motherhood, and much more from a biblical worldview. While we might not agree on every theological issue, we are unified in the truth of the gospel and recognize that this cannot be separated from our experiences. It's a gift to be able to share these things with you today. I pray that you will be encouraged and that God will be glorified. Keep in mind that the things we discuss are personal experiences. You may relate to the information, but every woman's body is different. You should always discuss your health and wellness practices with a trusted healthcare provider. Please note that on this podcast, we do discuss details regarding our bodies that you might want to discuss with your kids before they hear them on our show. With that in mind, let's get started. Hi, Mary. Welcome to the Olives and Arrows podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and where you're from?
Hi, thanks so much for having me on. Like you said, my name is Mary. My husband is Carrie, and we've been married for almost 5.5 years. We live in Orange County, California, and I'm a stay-at-home mom currently. So that is a joy and a blessing that I get to do.
That's so awesome. I love it. So can you tell us a little bit about your marriage and your journey to pregnancy? A lot of times we start with how you met your husband, and we can go from there.
Sure. So I met my husband through a mutual friend. We were both going to the same church, but they had different campuses at the time. And my friend invited both of us to a trip to Seattle. So it was me, my friend Cindy, and then Carrie and his roommate. And she kind of just put it out there and tried to see who would come. And we both said yes. Well, all four of us. And so we went on a trip to Seattle and just kind of a sightseeing trip. That's the first time I met him. And I just thought he was hilarious. I've never laughed so hard in my life. But he was just really just friendly. That was in 2013. And then somehow between May of 2013 and May of 2014, we were talking. And what stood out to me in our relationship was he was really keen on my walk with the Lord, and we talked a lot of theology and things like that, which I just never experienced before. So that was interesting for me and just something that I longed for in a relationship, of course, as a Christian. So we started dating. So then we went back to Seattle in May of 2014. We started dating shortly after that, and then we got engaged in Seattle in May of 2015. So a year dating, and then we got married November in 2015. So just a 6-month engagement. And then so early on, when we were engaged, we kind of were set to just start a family right away. And then somehow in the engagement process, I think we just really wanted to focus on what marriage was and really build a strong foundation of marriage. And so then we kind of talked about waiting a little bit and giving us that time to really, you know, get marriage under our belts a little bit. And so then kind of in our first year of marriage, my husband was asked to apply for a spiritual leadership program at our church. It's very at a high intensive, almost like a crash course seminary. And so at that point, we were kind of talking, and as much as the Lord would have totally given us grace to be able to do this while having a baby, my husband's thorn in the flesh is definitely health. He's a healthy guy, but he gets migraines pretty regularly. And if he's like does too many things, he just falls sick pretty easily. So in order for him to really focus on this 3-year program, we said, okay, let's wait a little bit. So you can focus on it. And then, you know, in the middle of it, we'll start trying. And that way he can kind of get through the bulk of it before having a family. It was a lot of studying, a lot of reading, and he has a pretty high demanding job as well. So we'd kind of come home from that and study until late into the night, and he'd have class once a week that, you know, went for 4 hours. It was just really intense and challenging. So we just wanted to do that for him. I actually went on the birth control pill right before we got married, kind of like some other guests. It's just one of those things that seemed normal, and a lot of people were doing, both Christians and non-Christians. Obviously now I see it very differently. I strongly urge every woman, if they're going to go on birth control, to really make an educated decision and Christian women specifically, if they're using it to prevent pregnancy and marriage, you know, to really understand what it means. And I know a lot of your other guests have kind of talked about that. So I definitely view it very differently. But at the time, it was like, oh, sure, that's the way to go. Everyone does that. So I was on the birth control pill. I was 25 when I got married, so I didn't feel too bad about it because we weren't planning on being on it for very long, and my cycles had already developed at that time. But again, I, you know, hindsight, I didn't really even know all these factors and things like that. But so I was on the pill. My husband started the program. We kind of came up with this date of summer 2018 was when we were going to start a family. We got some friends to join us too, which I don't recommend planning to start a family with your friends. Because, you know, if it doesn't work out, then it gets really hard. But So summer 2018 was kind of our goal. That would allow him to, you know, finish pretty much almost the whole program 2.5 years before, Lord willing, we'd have a newborn. Because in my mind, I thought we'd just get pregnant right away, and this was our plan. But, you know, man makes the plans and God, or what's the verse? Man in his heart does the plans, but the Lord directs his steps. So it's was never in our hands, but we decide, you know, it was all in our mind that we had this grand old plan that this was how it was going to work out. So as we were nearing summer 2018, my husband's family wanted to take a trip to Vietnam. My husband is Vietnamese. He was born in Vietnam, and his family was one of those families that escaped Vietnam. They were refugees in the Philippines, and by the grace of God, they came to America, and my husband was saved, you know, which the Vietnamese culture, there's not a lot of Christianity. So it's just a crazy story, and just God's blessing on him, even being in a, you know, a Buddhist family, things like that. So I was really wanting to go to Vietnam, especially knowing if we were going to start a family, it'd be very challenging to bring young ones there. So that kind of put a little bump in the road, because Vietnam was on the list of countries with Zika, which is a mosquito-carrying disease that could cause birth defects. So I was pretty nervous. You know, the CDC talks about if both parties go, you have to wait up to 6 months if one person's possibly infected. And so, you know, of course, I was a little bit bummed that we might have to prolong our plan of starting our family. But I also wanted to be extra cautious that we weren't bringing something into a pregnancy, you know, that we could avoid. So, So May 2018, we went to Vietnam. That's also when I got off birth control. I got my period right away, which was really good. And, you know, I was bummed that we had to wait the 6 months. But also around that time, I was learning about the fertility awareness method. And that's when I really learned about birth control and what it did to my body and, you know, all these kind of negative aspects of it that I wasn't informed of at the time. But I decided I was going to take those 6 months that we, you know, couldn't try for the safety of our, you know, future baby to really learn fertility awareness so we could use it to achieve pregnancy as well as, you know, prevent it in between babies if that's, what we wanted to do. So
absolutely. And sorry, Mary, real quick, can you tell us about how you discovered fertility awareness method and what that process of learning it looked like?
Yeah, so it's kind of comical. I had some FSA money and I saw a thermometer and somehow somewhere I heard about taking your basal body temperature. And so I got it and I didn't even read the instructions on how to use it. I would like walk around with my thermometer in my mouth and I'm like, yeah, that's not how it works. And then I think I found some gal on YouTube and she kind of explained it a little bit more. And then I found podcasts. And then, of course, I got that Taking Charge of Your Fertility, which is a very popular book. Of course, all these are secular platforms and things. But in the midst of learning this, you know, from secular people, it really just made me so in awe of the Lord and how he created women and their bodies and just how intricately he makes our cycles. And so many women hate their cycles, and learning about this just made me love it because God created it for life and for pregnancy. And, you know, one of the podcasts I listened to, she calls it a fifth vital sign of health. And I just thought that was so amazing how we can tell our health from our cycles and whether it's, you know, what we need to address based on luteal phase, follicular phase, whatever, all those different things. So I just listened to podcasts. I really wanted to take a class. There are some that I found, they're very expensive, or there's kind of the Catholic route where they have natural family planning, and we just never got around to it. So I just kind of learned through books and podcasts, and I definitely didn't have it down. But when we did start to try, and I'll get there in a little bit, I felt at least confident in what I did know about my cervical mucus and my basal body temperature. And I was actually paying attention to my period for once and, you know, really kind of seeing how that was going and things like that. So, so just kind of free resources. And I know it's a lot more difficult for other people who might have, you know, menstrual cycle challenge or things like that. I didn't feel like I had any, and I could kind of get a good grasp on what I was doing, but definitely a lot to learn still. So I started learning about fertility awareness and was just really excited about it. And, you know, so we were kind of, I was looking at all those different signs as we, you know, we're in that waiting period. And then one day I was just curious what the CDC had to say about Zika. And so I looked it up, and they had actually changed the recommendation from 6 months to 3 months. And so we were in that 3 month window, and it was go time. So I was super excited to just start the process. I really didn't think I would have any trouble getting pregnant. My two sisters had a pretty easy time getting pregnant. My dad, when my husband asked him for my hand, mentioned two things that stood out to him: divorce is expensive, and I'm going to be fertile, because my mom had four kids and had no trouble. And so in my mind, you know, I just thought that was going to be the case for me. So we started trying, you know, using my knowledge of fertility awareness and, you know, looking at my basal body temperature and my cervical mucus. And I really felt like we were timing things right to conceive. So the first couple cycles, it wasn't happening. And I always had an excuse for, oh, it's because I was sick or this or that, which are, you know, probably true things. But at the time, it was just an easy thing to kind of make an excuse for. And that was kind of, I guess, my coping mechanism of like, oh, it's fine. It's only been, sorry if you heard that. It's only been, you know, a cycle or two. And so as time went by, you know, we still weren't getting pregnant. In the midst of learning fertility awareness, I also learned a lot about nutrition and endocrine disruptors and just all the things that could possibly be toxic in our home. So I kind of took those steps. We didn't have a lot of toxic things. I kind of grew up in a health and wellness type family, so most of our products were already clean, but the few things that weren't, I swapped them out, taking more vitamins, you know, eating more fat, healthy fats and things like that, that I know is supposed to, you know, help, especially because I was on birth control. I kind of had to rebuild those stores of nutrition. So I was doing all that stuff. And early on, I, you know, really wanted to address, you know, both of our health. And so I was also, you know, getting my husband on vitamins and, you know, having him limit his coffee intake and all these different things. And so early on I was like, hey, we should test, you know, our hormones and different things. I wasn't seeing anything super concerning in my cycle. And I'm kind of a little bit separated from knowledge of fertility awareness being for postpartum now. I haven't really jumped back in, so I don't remember all the, you know, what I was seeing in my cycle necessarily, but, you know, I think part of it was, oh, maybe I have low progesterone because my, my luteal phase was short, or I don't know. So I kind of was looking at things of like, maybe we should both kind of go get tested. And what a lot of people say is, oh, no doctor is going to test you unless you've been trying for over a year. So for my husband, because he did kind of ask his doctor and, you know, she kind of rubbed him off like, oh, you need to be trying for longer than you know, a couple months or so. There's actually an at-home sperm test that we did to check, you know, the male factor of fertility, and everything kind of turned out normal. It wasn't, you know, top of the charts, but it wasn't, you know, anything to be concerned with. So that was kind of something that we didn't think that we really needed to worry about. I went to the doctor, had my hormones tested, and of course, a lot of the fertility awareness community, you know, they believe in Western medicine, but there's also part of, you know, hesitancy because they don't feel like they fully get to the problem. And that's why a lot of, you know, Western doctors prescribe birth control to, quote unquote, heal your menstrual cycle. But anyway, nothing seemed to be wrong. And so we just kind of kept trying. You know, we kind of got that out of the way that, you know, there wasn't any, at least, you know, red flag issues that we needed to address. Like I said, my cycle was pretty normal before birth control. I got it back after birth control, and there wasn't anything that seemed to be an issue. So we just continued trying. And as time went by, the, you know, every time my period came, there's definitely a disappointment. I never, because of fertility awareness, I never had to take a pregnancy test because I would just look at my chart. And the minute my temperature dropped after ovulation, I knew that I was going to get my period shortly after. So it wasn't really negative pregnancy test that, you know, caused, you know, sadness or disappointment. It was just my chart and kind of knowing what it was supposed to look like if it was a pregnancy chart. So, you know, it definitely got, you know, there's disappointment and, you know, just kind of frustration. And, you know, we thought we were just doing everything that we needed to do to make this happen. And we, of course, knew that the Lord was in control. So there's definitely that peace that, you know, we're just creating an environment to have a healthy baby and a healthy conception, but the Lord is in charge of my womb. He's going to open and close it in his time. But it doesn't take away kind of from the disappointment either of like, oh, we really want this. It's a good thing. You know, children are a blessing from the Lord. So why isn't it happening? So around 12 or 13 cycles, so about 10 months of trying, and I would say, you know, purposefully trying, you know, a lot of people, when they say they're trying, like, what does that mean? You know, because it does mean different things, especially if you don't know the fertility window, you know, you could be trying, you know, and it, of course, it's not going to be successful if it's not, you know, in that window. But so around 12 or 13 cycles, it had been 10 months, so not a horribly long time. But we kind of had a discussion of, okay, how long are we going to do this? We knew that we weren't going to do fertility treatments. We didn't really think they were necessary because there weren't any red flags. So we weren't going to do IVF or anything like that. And the pastor who married us, him and his wife had 10 years of undiagnosed infertility. Just there was no rhyme or reason of why they weren't getting pregnant. So we kind of had that in the back of our head as well. Like, we could be doing this for a while. You know, so what are we going to do with our time as we're trying? You know, and I'm sure there's a lot of women out there who, when they're trying, it really becomes like the center of their life and everything kind of revolves around, you know, trying to get pregnant. So it, we didn't want it to consume us. And so we kind of talked about, you know, how long are we going to do this? You know, what are we going to do? And that's when foster care and adoption kind of came back to our conversation. I'd always had a heart for foster care and adoption and just orphan care in general. And of course, as believers, my husband also knows how, you know, how much the Lord loves children and, you know, he wants Christians to care for the widow and the orphan. But for him personally, it wasn't something that he foresaw himself doing. Early on in our marriage, you know, I kind of just brought it up like, oh, what do you think about foster care? And he had the answer that many people do, that he loved the idea of it, but he personally didn't think he could do it because he didn't think he could say goodbye. And that's, of course, what a ton of people say and what why a ton of people don't do foster care. So I was kind of bummed because I was really hoping that that would be something that we did in our marriage. But, you know, that kind of that conversation left and we just kind of continued on our plan of having a biological kid. And so then, and also my husband, he just wasn't like around a lot of children. So he also like had a hard time like seeing himself love a child that wasn't his, and, you know, to kind of, you know, fix that, I kind of address his heart with foster care, not address it, but, you know, I kind of just wanted him to learn more about it. And if that was going to be part of our story, the Lord would obviously have to work in both of our hearts to get on the same page. But I did my part as a wife, and I started introducing him to just different podcasts or documentaries about foster care or adoption. And I really think the Lord started working in his heart as he learned more about it. Our friends started doing foster care, so we were intimately walking alongside them in the highs and the very low lows. Their two girls that they had, my husband fell in love with. We had such a great time. Kind of help raise them. You know, we would babysit them and we'd hang out with them when we'd go over to our friend's place. And we really just got to love them and adore them. So I could see the Lord working in my husband's heart. We started volunteering with the four-year-olds at our church. And so he started to love children. And of course, he always wanted children, but it was just, I think for men, it's a little bit harder to, you know, understand the nurturing and, you know, that part of it.
Yeah,
so I started
absolutely
introducing him to that. And, you know, I could see the Lord softening his heart and just giving him more of a heart for children and even foster care in a sense, you know, just in how we were supporting our friends. But it still wasn't something I think that he wanted. So fast forward to, you know, talking about how long are we going to try? I brought up foster care again. He still wasn't totally sure. Straight adoption just seemed to be too, one, expensive and daunting. And of course, foster care isn't about adoption. It's about reunification, and that's what makes it hard. But for some reason, we just kind of kept going back to foster care. I think mainly because we had friends that did it and we had a more intimate experience with it. So at some point, you know, my husband kind of took the reins and he started looking for agencies. And before we knew it, we found a Christian agency that was really close to our house that we really were excited about. And we kind of just gave it to the Lord. We said, Lord, you can open my womb and you can give us a biological child, or you can open our home and, you know, have kids in and out of our house. And, you know, if it's your will, we would adopt them. If it's your will, they'd be reunified. So that's kind of how we looked at it. And so we found the Christian organization. They were a little bit hesitant to start the process with us because we did, you know, we were very open that we were going to continue trying, that, you know, if it took us 5 years to get pregnant, we could have, you know, one or two kids in our home within that time period. And we just wanted to take and use our time wisely. We had an empty room. We had a heart to be parents. And we knew that, you know, there's kids that need homes, whether temporary or forever. So they were hesitant at first, but then they said, okay, we're going to approve you. If you get pregnant, we're going to put you on hold. As much as you want to do foster care, you know, unfortunately, foster care will always be there. You know, if you get pregnant, you want to focus on that baby. And then when you're ready, you know, you can jump back in. So we did all the things for foster care. It was a long process. We started it in July of 2019. So we started trying probably in August of 2018. We had the conversation, or we started doing foster care in 2019. And the process took us up until November of 2019. And the way it was laid out, we could have been fully approved and ready to take in a kid by November. We did have a plan to visit my grandpa in Florida in December of 2019. So we decided that our go date would be January 2020. So we could go on our trip and then come home and have a placement. And so come November, you know, the time where we could have been fully approved, we still had a few more classes and things. I had my first potential pregnancy cycle. So we were continuing trying, and again, no pregnancy. And the Lord just gave me a freedom that we had other options. You know, we were excited about foster care. And or a pregnancy. And so there was just a lot of freedom in that. And so I was equally, kind of looking at both and open to both and just had my hands open for the Lord to do whatever. But in November of 2019, I had, like I said, a cycle that looked like it could be a pregnancy cycle. My temperature remained high after ovulation and stayed high and for a lot longer than it had in the past. And my cycles were pretty regular. So when I saw that high temperature continue to stay high, I got really excited. And I was like, okay, this could be a pregnancy. Like, we could be pregnant. All I had were expired all I had were expired pregnancy tests that my sister had given me. So I took one, it was negative, but I was like, oh, it's okay. It's an expired pregnancy test. But then shortly later I did get my period and I was pretty devastated. I never had a cycle that close to looking like a pregnancy cycle. And, so when I really thought I was pregnant, it was like a high, high to a low, low. And it opened our eyes and our hearts to kind of question what we were doing. You know, if I wanted a pregnancy so bad, should we be doing foster care? You know, should we just focus on this? Should we, it was just very emotional. So, we sought the Lord and, we kind of, he mended our hearts and then we kind of got back on track and we just continued with foster care and trying and just, again, we're just trusting the Lord with what he had for us. So it's pretty devastating, but we kind of moved forward and we were getting closer to, opening our home and we were starting to tell more people. I told my work and we started talking about leave of absence and all these things. So it was becoming more and more real. My friends were planning me a foster shower and it was just getting really exciting. Unfortunately, in December, my grandpa did pass away. So we had to move back our trip from January to February to go to his memorial. Subsequently, that also moved back our go date for foster care. So instead of January 2020, it was going to be more like February, March. And so we just kind of continued working on preparing our home and finishing up our certification, getting the nursery ready. We only have a 2-bedroom, so we really had to do a lot of Tetris and moving things around to make, a place for a little child. And, we were just full force getting ready to open our home and our hearts to whoever the Lord had in store. And then come January 2020, I guess backtrack, there was another bump in the road. We didn't tell my husband's family that we were doing foster care right away. At the time, we were pretty much their only hope for a grandchild. He's only one of two, and, there was no marriage or girlfriend in sight for his brother. And in Asian culture, it's not very common for foster care and adoption. So that's why we kind of waited so long to tell them because we weren't sure how they were going to take it. Mm-hmm. So January 19th of 2019, we told them, and it was just such a heartbreaking conversation. They had phrases of, why would you do this to us? And why don't you just have your own child? And, why don't you do IVF, all these things. So it was pretty hurtful, especially when, we are doing all the things that we could possibly do, to make this happen. And, we were the ones signing up for foster care. So we know that obviously the people around us aren't getting all the training. They aren't getting all the knowledge that we were. They didn't buy into it. So we could understand the frustration, but it still really hurt that, they weren't on board with it. And, so there was some pain in that, but a couple weeks later on January 27th of 2019, again, I had a cycle that looked like it might be a pregnancy cycle. And because of the past heartache, from a couple months earlier, I didn't want to jump too quickly. And I was just going to kind of ride it out and, just wait for my period to come. But that day on January 27th, I was just like, I think I should take a pregnancy test. We had our last foster care training the next day. And then the next week was going to be our final walkthrough. So it kind of felt like we should probably know because eventually we were going to put a hold on trying so we could just have a placement and focus on that child for an undetermined amount of time. So I was like, we should probably know, you know, so we can start preparing for that next, you know, season of foster care. So I thought about it all day at work. I come home and, you know, my husband's starting to get dinner ready and I told him I'm going to go take a test. And so I go to the bathroom, you know, take the test, and right away there's that second line on the test. And I'm just like in shock and I'm like, okay, but I have to wait 3 minutes. I don't know why I thought that the line was going to disappear in 3 minutes. But I was like, we have to wait the 3 minutes. So I put it there on the bathroom counter and I walked out and I was like, I think I'm pregnant. And he's like, it tells you right away. I was like, well, I don't know. Let's just wait and then we'll find out. And so we kind of finished doing some dinner prep and I go back into the bathroom and yep, there's two lines on the pregnancy test. And so I bring it out. And at this point I'm so like in shock and just kind of like I wasn't as emotional as I thought I was going to be because I was also just kind of nervous that it wasn't going to be true or real or I don't know. So I come back out to my husband and I said, all right, it's positive. He goes, take another one. So 7 pregnancy tests later, including an expired one, which I now know expired ones work if you're actually pregnant. well, I don't know, maybe not all for all people, but so including an expired one, including a Dollar Tree one, all of them were pregnant. So we were just in shock. And this was at the end of January. We were supposed to be taking a foster placement, you know, at the end of February or beginning of March. So things changed real fast. You know, I pretty much had to tell my work right away because they were going to hire a temp for me that was supposed to start, you know, take over my job. So I pretty much told them right away. I just had to tell so many people right away. I had this foster shower planned, you know, at the end of February. And I spoke to the gal planning it. And I said, you know what, it's going to be too complicated to cancel it now. I still need a shower. Technically, I'll just use the shower to announce my pregnancy and kind of catch everyone up on everything. I had to tell the foster agency, you know, they were very excited for us. And they told us to just finish our certification and then we could just keep it up until we were ready. So we've closed that out and so I was pregnant and all these people knew. And so I had a shower at the end of February of 2020 and I announced it, which was actually such a gift because for a few reasons. One, I mean, I don't know how many people get to share that they're pregnant in person to all their closest friends and family. Obviously I told our family before that, but so many of our close friends I got to tell in person. And then the other part was it was that COVID happened, you know, a few weeks later and I may not have had a shower at all, you know, not knowing what it was going to be like. So
right, the world shut down.
Exactly. So I still got a shower with, you know, as many people as I wanted. Well, not necessarily, but you know, I didn't have to limit it. We didn't have to do any COVID things. And then I got to tell a ton of people in person. So it was such a roller coaster. We just laughed at God's timing. You know, he could have provided a pregnancy. You know, I didn't do anything different really, you know, the whole time we were kind of doing the same things. You know, but he wanted us to trust in him and he wanted us to give our plans to him, which, you know, of course he's the God of the universe. And it also gave us a heart for foster care that we didn't have before as a couple. So many gifts, a gift of a pregnancy, a gift of a heart for foster care, and we still do hope to do it in the future. And that's just something that we probably wouldn't have even thought about had I gotten pregnant right away. So God was just so good and comical. His timing is always perfect, even when it's a week before our final walkthrough. And it's just, it was such a blessing and such a gift. And so that's kind of our pregnancy story. All glory to God. Wow. And just, I laugh at it. It's just too great.
Yeah. Yeah. Laugh without fear at the future, right?
Yeah.
Not to be cheesy, but it's true. I mean, that is beautiful. And I love that. That's the lesson that you walked away from this with, because, I think it would be easy to, you know, turn to kind of a weird disappointment in the timing or just a confusion. Like, why did we walk down this difficult road with, you know, having issues getting pregnant and then doing all this training for foster care. And yeah, here we are. So I just think that that's wonderful. And I'm encouraged by that for sure.
Yeah, it was definitely a roller coaster. And we just praise God. It's just, you know, it's all in his hands. So that's all I can say about that.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. So do you want to go ahead and jump into your pregnancy, how that was?
Yeah. So I guess one last thing about foster care, I was at a place before we got pregnant that I would really mourn not doing it. And it was one of those things where like, I want to be pregnant, but we want to jump into this. And so that was something that I did also have to mourn, even though, you know, I got quote unquote what I wanted was this pregnancy, but I also, my heart was kind of split. But something that I was going to mourn if I didn't get pregnant was the fact of being pregnant and giving birth. My mom taught Bradley classes, which is a natural birth method, all throughout my life. I was born at home. I was just raised with a lot of birth. So like I had a desire to be pregnant and have a birth. And so that was something that I felt like I would mourn if I never was able to get pregnant. But then, you know, by the grace of God, I did get pregnant and my pregnancy was okay. I was pretty nauseous for the first 15 weeks, which was rough. The first couple weeks I was at work, pretty much trying to hide it from everyone else who I didn't have to tell right away. And so it was rough. I had to take a lot of walks outside to get fresh air. I was trying to be healthy, but also I just needed to eat. So I would make like healthy versions of stuff just to try to get like nutrition at the same time. But it was pretty rough. My husband laughs at me because I would have a box of crackers next to my bed. So I would wake up, eat a cracker, but it would just sustain me enough to get to the toaster where I would have some toast. And then, you know, I would just have to snack like all day long or else I'd feel horrible. And so the first 15 weeks were kind of like that. Definitely pittered out as I got over the second trimester hump. And then since March 16th, I was at home because of the pandemic. So it kind of worked out in my favor. I could sleep in until 7:30. I didn't have to get dressed. I didn't have to get ready. I could just roll out of bed, roll onto my laptop. I could get snacks whenever I wanted. You know, I still walked every day outside, which was just such a great help to me to just get that fresh air and sunshine. So although it was a crazy time to be pregnant, it also was a blessing that I, you know, was at home all day, every day. But at the same time, I was in HR for a senior living company. So my job got exponentially busy because I handled leave of absences and unemployment. So as you can imagine, in the midst of a pandemic that centers around elderly people, as you know, one of the main perpetrators, I guess, or who could get the virus. Mm-hmm. So many people were wanting to leave work and, you know, get unemployment and all this stuff. So my job got super stressful, super busy, which was a bummer because I didn't feel that great and I really wanted to not have to be working all day, every day. But
yeah.
Once after 15 weeks, my symptoms kind of got better. I still had like weird food aversions. Just food didn't taste the same. And I mostly forced myself to eat because I knew I had to, but like nothing sounded good. Nothing tasted good. I had a lot of healthy quesadillas is what I call them. I had like healthy tortillas and I don't know, who knows if they're really that healthy, but
that's good though. I had a lot of Chick-fil-A in those that period. So I get it.
Yeah. So, first trimester, part of second trimester were pretty rough. And then it was kind of not smooth sailing, but nothing really remarkable stood out as like, you know, very bad. I had regular pregnancy discomfort, you know, sleeping, and it was summer. So it was so hot and and just things like that. You know, I had trouble sleeping on my, what are you supposed to sleep on, your side? I'm a back sleeper. So that was kind of challenging getting good sleep. But overall, you know, after the nausea, just dealing with the food aversions, and then, you know, had a pretty good pregnancy after that.
Good. That's awesome. And I forgot to ask you, were you under the care of a midwife or a doctor at this point? And what did that care look like?
So because I was kind of raised in the birth world, I would have loved a home birth. I did have to get my husband to kind of agree to that. And he was kind of wishy-washy, but home births in California are super expensive. You know, upwards of $7,000 for a midwife, or maybe more than that. But I just didn't feel right about spending all that money, although that's the type of birth I wanted. So I was kind of dabbling between a standalone birth center, or I was able to find a hospital decently close to my house that had a birth center in the hospital that you would work with midwives. So I was in between the two types of birth centers. To be honest, I kind of strayed away from the out-of-hospital birth center. One, because I still would have to pay a good amount out of pocket. Insurance did cover some. And then the other thing, I just felt like, you know, as you've mentioned before, they can kind of be kind of new agey. And I just didn't feel like I'd be totally comfortable, at least at that specific birth center. So I went with the one at the hospital. So I was cared for by midwife. So it was actually such a great experience. I was really impressed with the care that I got. All my appointments were super in-depth and detailed, and they were very much like what it felt like. I mean, I didn't have experience, but what it felt like an out-of-hospital birth center, just very natural, very focused on the mother and the baby, and they practiced all the kind of natural birth things that you would get at home or at a birth center. They pretty much described it as a home birth in a hospital setting. So my husband was on board because he liked the comfort of being in the hospital. And then I was able to have a queen bed in my room. I didn't have to be attached to any monitors. They had a labor tub. You can't birth in the tub, but they had a labor tub, which was very important to me. And they were just very easygoing and really, yeah, like I said, just focused on, you know, having a healthy, happy birth. So I loved all the midwives. I did meet with multiple midwives per appointment. You know, so I'd get to know them because, you know, you just never know which one is going to be there or on call the day that you have the baby. And then by the grace of God, I couldn't have anyone at my appointments because of COVID. But for whatever reason, I asked for the anatomy scan and my husband was able to go and he was able to see the baby on the ultrasound, which was something, you know, that he would have missed out on, you know, because of COVID. So that was really great. And I just throw that in because it was special to me. And
that's so amazing.
Yeah. So it was a good in-between a home birth and a hospital, straight hospital center. So I was very happy that that was an option for me.
Yeah, that's unique and such a blessing. Yeah. So I'm glad that you got to do that. So let's go ahead and jump into your birth. So, if you want to start with, going into labor and what those days look like leading up.
Sure. So I fell into the trap of thinking I was going to be late because all first time moms are late. And so I worked up until September 25th. My due date was October 1st. So pretty much less than a week before my due date, but I was like, I'm going to be late. It's going to be fine. You know, I had to train someone. At the time I had told my boss I wasn't coming back to work. So I really wanted to be really diligent about training this person so they could take over completely. And, you know, it was a clean transition, everything like that. So I worked pretty much up until the last moment. So I had the weekend after my last day, which was a Friday. And then I had Monday, the 28th, was my first real day off of work. I spent it with two friends who also had babies within the last, you know, 9 months. And both of them had their waters break, but didn't go into labor. I was like, oh man, like, I don't want that to happen to me. So I go to bed. I have this whole week planned for myself, pack my hospital bag, make my padsicles, clean the house. Pretty much that was when I was going to start nesting. So I wake up September 29th. I probably couldn't sleep in, you know, because you're pregnant and uncomfortable. And my husband was getting up to go to work. So I woke up kind of normal, 6 o'clock, 6:30. And I felt like I peed my pants. And I was like, okay. You know, I'd kind of trained myself all throughout pregnancy to not get up in the night to go to the bathroom, because when I would just be up for hours. So I would just go back to sleep and then, you know, go to the restroom in the morning. So I was like, okay, maybe I'm just getting weaker and, you know, I'm a lot bigger. So I thought it was just, you know, I couldn't make it to the restroom on time. So then, you know, I change my shorts that I was wearing and I get back into bed hoping to get, you know, a little bit more rest. And then I feel it again. I'm like, okay, I think that's my water. So, and I think I had put a pad in. So then I was able to kind of see the different colors. Like I said, my mom teaches natural birth classes. She's also a doula. So I was snapping photos and sending them to her. And I was like, is this meconium? Is this normal? What is this? And, you know, she's like, that's definitely something. I think, you know, I think your water broke. And I was like, okay. I was like, okay. And so I was like, this could take forever. You know, like people are in labor for like 30 hours, their first kid. So I was like, I told my husband, you should go to work. I'll just call some people to come over and maybe they can help me. So I texted a few friends and all I said was, hey, what are you doing today? And, you know, they would respond and, you know, most of them were busy or whatever, but I don't know why. I just didn't tell them I might be in labor. Like, can you come help me? Like, I was just like, whatever. So then at some point we decided my husband was just going to stay home from work or stay home and work from home. He had a quote unquote essential job. So he had been going into the office every day, since the pandemic happened. So we just decided he was going to work from home and just kind of be around. And in my mind, I still was going to like do all these things and whatever. And so we had breakfast together and I was one egg in, and I could no longer sit on the breakfast stool that we have. And I had to be on my hands and knees with my hips swing in the air. And so it's like, okay, I think it's starting, which I was thankful for. Cause again, I thought my two friends had rubbed off on me, and, you know, both of them had one of them had a minor intervention to start labor, and the other one, you know, had a super long labor, and just, it was really intense because her, you know, her water broke, but she didn't go into labor. So I was thankful. I said, thank you, Lord, for letting labor happen. And, at first it was pretty mild. I quickly downloaded a contractions app. I totally do not know if I understood how to time my contractions, because really early on it was telling me to go to the hospital and I'm like, there's no way. And I never had hard period cramps or anything. So I kind of thought I was just like a wussy and was like, wow, like I'm never going to make it if this is like early labor. So I kind of went, then at some point I was like, okay, you can't work anymore. I need you to be around and I need you to pack our hospital bag, because that was on my list to do. And so I was on the toilet, cause that's what felt most comfortable. I was still leaking. So I was on the toilet or on my bed on hands and knees or on the bathroom on hands and knees, for all my contractions. And my husband was running around packing the bag, and then I would call him and I would lean on him, and we kind of went in a cycle of that. And so he ended up calling the midwife on call. And at that time, it was probably 8:39. I don't remember the time necessarily, but it was still kind of early. I had texted my mom. My mom was going to be my doula. She was able to, the hospital was allowing your partner and a support person. So because my mom has doula certification, she was able to be my doula. So I take that back. A support person and a doula was allowed to come. So because my mom was a doula, I was able to have my mom there. And so I texted her. She lives in San Diego. So she had a little bit of a drive to get to the hospital. So I kind of was telling her how things were going earlier in the morning. You know, I was sending her pictures, like I said, and one picture was definitely like a bloody show. So she was like, all right, you're in labor. Let me get a sub. Let me pack my bag and I'll get going. So we were in conversations with my mom and the midwife, and I was still able to talk a little bit, but I would have to, when the contractions came, I would just be in like this low moaning sound, leaning on my husband. And then probably around 10 o'clock, I couldn't really talk when my husband was calling the midwife and she said to just come on down. So, it is all kind of a blur. I was just kind of going from the toilet to the floor, to the toilet, to the floor, just in labor land. And the contractions were getting really strong. And again, I don't know if I was timing it right. I can't tell you how far apart or anything, but the app was telling me to go to the hospital. And the midwife said we could go. So we were going. I had a towel wrapped around my waist and I walked out to the car and my neighbor walked by and she just looked at me and was like so giddy. She like knew I was going to the hospital. And so I'm in the back seat, unbuckled. Lord, thank you for providing a safe transport because I could not buckle the seatbelt. I was just all the bumps. I was trying to find solace in like the little bit of sun that was on my side of the car. And my husband went to the emergency room instead of where we were supposed to go. And I wasn't sure we were going to make it. So we finally made it to the hospital. They gave me a wheelchair. I hopped on that thing so fast. And they wheeled me to triage. So we left our house probably around 10:30. And we got to the hospital around 11 or 11:30. It was just a 30-minute drive to the hospital. So I was in triage, and this whole time I was able to really breathe through my contractions and, you know, as they say, just ride the wave of the contraction. Triage was the worst because I had to be on my back, and that's like when it was so painful. She checked my cervix, the triage nurse. This was the first time I had my cervix checked, and then she gave me a COVID test. And I was 6 to 7 meters dilated and fully effaced. And I was just like waiting for it to be finished so I could roll back on my side. And by then the midwife came, my husband came, you know, after doing all he had to do, he finally made it back to the triage room. I think my mom had arrived at some point and was already there or somewhere in the hospital. And then at that point, my labor changed, my contractions changed, and I could no longer ride the waves of the contractions. Like my body wanted to push. I don't know if I started pushing then or they just changed, but you know, I asked my midwife, I was like, should I be like bearing down like that? Like I can't, you know, in whatever labor land language I was speaking, like, should I be bearing down? Should I be like pushing? And she's like, if it feels comfortable, go for it. It's like, okay, this is the only thing my body is letting me do. Kind of backtrack, the whole labor at home just felt like I needed to have a bowel movement. And I laugh because I always describe my birth as so beautiful, but every time I talk about it, it's all about poop. And like, it felt like I just needed to take a bowel movement and then I could, you know, continue laboring. So it was really low. So then when I started like feeling like I needed to push, it like felt again like, okay, I just need to get this bowel movement out and then I'll be able to have this baby. So anyway, they rolled me from triage to the room and they were getting the labor tub ready. And so I went back on the toilet because that was the place where it felt most comfortable and just laboring there. And then once they got the tub ready, I was in the tub and kind of doing the same things, just when the contractions would come, instead of breathing through them at this point, I was just kind of like, I guess I was pushing, but I don't think that they would consider that pushing. I don't know. It still is really confusing to me because it just was unlike anything I expected I would experience. I thought it'd be a very clear, like, this is labor, this is pushing, but this kind of felt like a gray area where I felt like I was almost doing both, but it literally was the only thing my body could do. So I was in the tub and I could remember a lot and I could, you know, like, I feel like I was very aware of my surroundings, but I was completely silent, which I like wasn't expecting. And I could like hear the different conversations around me. They asked back in triage, they asked if I wanted a student and I was like, sure, like just not thinking. So there's like a student, a nurse, the midwife, my mom, my husband, you know, they were feeding me mango and plantain chips and giving me water. And I was just like in and out of this labor land. And so I don't know how long everything was, but I was in the tub for a little bit. And the nurse at some point was like, you can't use the restroom in the tub. So if you need to use the restroom, you need to get out. And I just thought that was so funny because, as you know, when you are giving birth, or, you know, you're aware that sometimes you poop. And so there's definitely other things floating around in that water, you know, that my mom and my husband were having to fish out. And so I'm like, you know, at the time I just was like, okay, like, I guess I need to get out to, you know, go pee. Although there's like, you know, poop flakes floating around in this water. But I think it was her tact to get me out of the tub, because I know sometimes water can, you know, stall you a little bit. So I get out of the tub, I sit on the toilet, and they check me, and his head is there. And so I'm like, oh, okay. And so they're like, all right, let's get to pushing. And so I get on the bed, hands and knees, which was kind of my go-to position, you know, pretty much from the beginning. That's the only thing that felt good. And I was pushing, and I think I pushed for over an hour, and that was just, it was definitely challenging, and it felt like nothing was progressing. And the midwife was incredible. She was like massaging the area, and like the whole team that was there, it was just such a great experience. Everyone was super encouraging. Everyone was, you know, the midwife knew what she was doing, preparing my body and, you know, telling me what, kind of walking me through it. And, you know, my husband was supporting me. And so I was just kind of going for it. And at one point, like, I was tired, and I was like, why isn't he coming out? And so they're like, let's try to change position. And they, you know, kind of mentioned a few different things, and nothing sounded great. My mom had me standing up. So she was like, oh, why don't you stand up? And I was like, there's no way I'm standing up. Like, I need to bear down on something. And then they were talking about getting out the birth stool. And then my body was just like, I just lifted one of my legs up and then, you know, did a push. And then that's kind of when he came out. And so the midwife was able to catch him and bring him to my husband, and then my husband gave him to me, and so my son was born. And it was just like the most crazy experience I've ever had, to be going through labor and pushing, and then all of a sudden there's a child in your arms. And it was just so amazing. And just the one negative was that my husband did have to wear a mask. So I feel like I couldn't really see his face and like his expression, but I could definitely see in his eyes, just like the joy of like, this is my son. I just watched my wife push him out. And, so it was just wild. He did have his hand next to his face. So I think that's what was causing, you know, the trouble of getting him out. That also led to, my midwife called it a barely second degree tear. So, you know, after he came out, they flipped me over and I was just holding him with my husband. And the beautiful thing about having a queen size bed is that we could both be in there fairly comfortably. My midwife, you know, stitched me up, and then it was kind of just us. And my mom was there for a little bit of time, but due to COVID, she had to leave after birth because she was no longer needed as a doula. And yeah, so it was just, that was our birth experience. And I was just so thankful to God that it was quick. I had him at 2:21 PM. So from 6:30 to 2:21 was not a long time. I thought I was going to be in labor for 30 hours. I thought I was going to be 2 weeks late. So he ended up coming September 29th. So I think that's 39 weeks and 4 days or something like that. Maybe 5 days. So yeah, it was just, wow. I was so thankful for such a good experience. And
yeah,
now I have this beautiful son and I just love him.
That's so wonderful. Yeah. That sounds like kind of a whirlwind birth story, really quick for a first time mama.
Yes, definitely. Definitely not what I was expecting at all.
Yeah.
So I definitely recommend people prepare, you know, because now that I've had my baby early, I realized that out of a 10 of my friends or people that have had babies in the last, you know, 12 months, only one person was late. Everyone was early or on their due date. So now I'm like, just be ready.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think preparing as far as in advance as you can, while it's still comfortable to move around and, you know, get things packed up is a good idea.
Yeah. And don't work to the last minute.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So tell us about postpartum then. How did that go when you checked out of the hospital and on from there?
So we were only in the hospital for 24 hours. So super short visit, which I'm thankful for as much as I loved having the nurses and things. It's not home. So we got home and thankfully my mom was able to come after the birth and make my padsicles, which I didn't make, and kind of, you know, prepare my home a little bit that I didn't get to do because I was early. But it was a pretty good postpartum experience. I'm super thankful for my mom because she's so knowledgeable about birth and babies. She was very helpful. My husband just stepped into fatherhood just so well, and yeah, it was a pretty good time. It's definitely something you can't really prepare for necessarily. Like I had no idea what kind of emotions I was going to have. Something I definitely recommend for women is to have the boundary talk, because my son was my in-law's first grandchildren. I think they were a little too excited and we're just around a lot, and they were super helpful. But as a newly postpartum mom who is wearing a diaper, has cracked nipples, and just is in a whole new, I was a whole new person, you know, after that birth. It was just a lot for me, and it felt very much like I was just like a milkmaid. Like I would feed my son and then he'd be in someone's arms. And so that was really hard early on. That's definitely something I recommend new moms to really have a conversation about, because you just don't know, and you almost want to have tighter boundaries and then loosen them than not have any. And we just didn't have the talk yet because, you know, he didn't come when I thought he was going to come. So that made it hard early on. Breastfeeding was definitely challenging. The first week, you know, I had a pretty bad first latch, and then from there it was just kind of the healing process of the cracks. And you know, of course, you have to continue breastfeeding to heal it. So that was pretty painful, but my mom was super helpful with making sure I was icing my breasts and doing warm compresses. And, you know, when I was super engorged, my son would have such a hard time. And so that was pretty challenging. And we learned some tips, you know, shake the girls, warm up the girls to get ready for your baby.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there's definitely challenges, but I healed. You know, by day 10 or something, I felt like we were in a good groove, and there's definitely things that we were still working on, but there was no more pain, and, you know, we were kind of in a rhythm. You know, healing was pretty decent. I would say the hardest part physically was my tailbone. I don't know, just because he was so low and his hands were, at least one was by his face, maybe both. So there's a lot of pressure. My tailbone was bruised probably for like 6 weeks. You know, it was hard to sit. And of course, in the early, you know, weeks, months of postpartum, you're sitting all the time breastfeeding. So that was pretty challenging. But I was able to get out on walks, you know, fairly early. So it was just a whole lot, you know, mentally, physically, spiritually, it's just a lot that you just don't prepare for. Or I guess you can prepare. I just didn't prepare for that. I kind of thought, I don't know. I did some research, but I thought it was just going to come a little bit more naturally, or I don't know. There's just things that you, hindsight's 2020. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I think especially in the area of like spiritually and emotionally, you can try to prepare, but I think every postpartum experience is so different. So, you're really kind of walking a new road. I mean, even if you have multiple kiddos, every time, just kind of navigating it with the Lord, as you're just kind of stumbling through this beautiful new experience.
It definitely gives you, you know, like I look at, you know, Mary, the mother of Jesus, way differently now, because And I look at Jesus, you know, just like the whole gospel of, you know, Jesus becoming flesh. And, you know, I'm sure Mary had trouble doing stuff, you know, like she's not God, so she's human. She struggled with all the things we did, you know, it's birth was after the fall. So she experienced all the pain. And, you know, I look at my son, and I'm like, Jesus was probably crying in the middle of the night. And, you know, Mary needed to nurse it. Like all these things, it's just, it totally makes the gospel real and just how humbling it was for Christ to come as a baby. And just like how big of a lesson that is, that we, you know, mothers, you know, not perfectly, but we learn to love our children unconditionally, sacrificially. We're giving of our bodies, you know, just as Jesus gave of his body for us. And it's just, man, labor, birth, just the gospel is just so much more brighter and more clear.
Wow.
Just kind of comparing those things of like, wow, you know, the Lord still has his scars and we still have ours from whether that's, you know, stretch marks or tears or whatever. And, you know, those are for the glory of God. And yeah, it's just super powerful just thinking about all that.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, that's a really sweet application to take away from that experience, 100%. So can you tell us about how motherhood has been since kind of the rougher postpartum period closed?
Yeah, motherhood, like I said, it didn't come naturally to me, and I thought it would, and I think a lot of women feel like it should, but it definitely has been hard, and I haven't made it easy for myself because I, you know, to my shame and to my detriment, I just haven't sought the Lord as much or as often as I should in it. I'm relying a lot on my own strength because, you know, the world gives us tips on this, tips on that. And, you know, there's so many things coming from all over that it's so easy to just lean on, you know, that parenting advice instead of the Lord. You know, so to my detriment, it's been a struggle, just not feeling natural and leaning on my own strength and not the Lord's. But I am finding grace in that, even though it's been really hard. Just every new stage is overwhelming. And, you know, the way I handle day-to-day decisions, like it feels like they're life and death. Like it's that hard. Like, do I change his diaper now or later? Like it's just crazy how much like a little baby can give you so much, you know, it's such a big responsibility. And, you know, you want to do what's right, but, you know, there's freedom. I don't need to be this stressed out over a diaper, but, you know, in my flesh, you know, I want it to be perfect or I want it to be this way. But, so I'm working on just leaning on the Lord and just allowing him to be what he is. He's the creator and the sustainer of life. And, you know, I can do my due diligence to raise my son and, you know, kind of take in the tips and the tricks. But, you know, at the end of the day, as long as he's alive and healthy, the most important thing is that he grows up to know and follow Christ. But it's been challenging. It's been very hard. I don't feel like a mom. I don't feel like I look like a mom. Sometimes I'm walking the streets and I'm like, people probably think I'm his nanny. I don't know why. so it's definitely something the Lord is, you know, working on my heart in and just growing me in. So,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I think it just goes back to what you were saying about motherhood is such a humbling experience. And it's just something that you don't know what it's going to be like until you're there. So
yes, I
think that will be very relatable for lots of mamas out there.
Yeah. So if it doesn't come naturally, I mean, I think like everything, the Lord uses challenges to sanctify us. So, you know, when it's hard, that's why we need the Lord, you know, that's why we need sanctification. So, you know, and I'm preaching to myself, I need to take advantage of the hard and get on my knees, you know, and be more like Christ because that's the goal, right? You know, if it was easy, I wouldn't need Christ as much. So that's definitely something I encourage other moms to do is when it's hard, take it, you know, use that for your benefit, you know, seek the Lord and be sanctified and be more Christ-like because at the end of the day, that's what's more important.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's a good word. And that's a good segue into our last question of Do you have any advice for new moms or to those longing to be mothers?
Definitely just trusting in the Lord. You know, my story has different components, but, you know, it's not as long as some people. And so I can understand that the disappointment and the pain can get even deeper the longer you try and the harder it is. But I think the lesson is the same, is that God is in charge and, you know, we make our plans, but he is the sovereign God who really has the better and more perfect plan in our life. So just really trust in the Lord and make sure that your whole growing your family, everything is Christ-centered. And sometimes that's really hard because it's easy to want to be in control. But to just, you know, surrender that and give it to Christ and bring people into the journey, because it's a lot easier to go off on your own and go out of your own flesh and strength when you're doing it in isolation. But when you have community around you who's encouraging you and pointing you to Christ, and even with me, I had a friend who only had two periods in 2 years and she got pregnant, you know? And so I'm like, that is the Lord, you know, like, she shouldn't have gone pregnant that easy. She hasn't even had a cycle. And, you know, the Lord gave her a child. And so just kind of being able to see other people and where they are. And obviously there's a comparison part that can be negative, but in another sense, the comparison of, wow, the Lord, it's totally the Lord. You know, there's nothing we can do to give life without the Lord. So, just be in community, focus on the Lord, and just be honest with yourself too. I think, you know, it's easy to just put on a front or whatever, but when we do that, then we kind of take away from, you know, our husbands being an encourager to us and the Lord being an encourager to us and our friends being an encourager to us. So, just being transparent, and that's definitely hard. Something I'm definitely working on as well, because it's challenging, but I would say that is important in all parts of fertility and pregnancy and parenthood.
Agreed. Yeah, that can be difficult when you're already feeling vulnerable, but it's in those vulnerable places that we really need the most support. So that's such an encouraging word.
Yes, for sure. So yeah. God is good.
Absolutely. He is. He is. Well, Mary, this brings us to the end of our time together, and thank you so much for coming on. This has been just a beautiful insight into your experience, and I know that this will be an encouragement to others. Is there anything else that you wanted to end with, or any other thoughts that you had?
No, I think I covered it. You know, I'm just so thankful for this podcast and just having a Christian perspective, because the birth world is kind of rough. And even parenthood, the mom world is kind of rough too. You know, there's a lot of lies and deceptive things out there on, you know, you deserve this, you're this, whatever. But, you know, our example and our goal should be Christ and in Christ. So just kind of remember that. Don't bog yourself up with too much knowledge. Obviously it's helpful, but, you know, don't have 1,000 accounts that you follow that are giving you all sort of different crazy advice. You know, but seek the Lord and seek your community, and, you know, allow your motivation to be Christ-centered and not worlds or self-centered, because it's so easy, I think, in this stage to just compare and want to impress people and want to be on the right track. But, you know, as Christians, we should live our lives differently. So it's definitely a challenge living in this world and in this culture, but we should parent our kids differently and seek the Lord, and obviously seek the Lord to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. That is such a great place to wrap. I really appreciate your time today, Mary. And I hope that others are encouraged when they listen to this. Thank you.
Thank you. And all glory to God.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Have a good one.
You as well.
I truly hope that today's episode was an encouragement to you. I pray that you will give thanks to the Lord because of his righteousness. Please subscribe, share, and leave a rating for this podcast. I could not do this without you. See you next time.